From the streets of Toronto to the backwoods of Bancroft, here's your Moose Country Minute with Mark Bonikoski.
This is supposed to be a big weekend for me. Today I get my hair cut after I don't know how many months of non-attentive days. And then tomorrow is my birthday. I'm excited about the haircut. The birthday is just another day, but the years that have piled up are scary. I won't tell you how many of them there are, but it's more than I ever expected to get considering my hell-bent ways. You talked to Angelo about that, so there's a plus there. The haircut is a different matter. I don't treat myself to much, but I do with the haircut. I go to a place with spa in its name, and I get the star treatment for a star treatment price, including a pedicure. First, an always attractive young woman will wash my hair for the longest time while she massages my neck and head. Then I will have a hot towel put on my face, totally covering it, which has this all sounding rather erotic. Then, when the towel comes off, my face is gently sprayed with some exotic oil that enters the pores and makes them want to dance. Yeah, that's right, dance. Then I am led to the stylist chair, where I will be made once again presentable to the outside world, and a real spot-up end with a touch of mousse. Then out I strut, a new man. And oh yeah, happy birthday to me. Throat Door Journal Radio, I'm Mark Bonikoski.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Angelo Viola, Joe Gruskowski, and Derek Brandeo at your service. Of course, that was Bono. I don't know where he was going with that. I was a little worried that we were going to have to pull the plug on that commentary, but nicely done. I cannot envision Mark in a spa, anything that has the word spa in it. But there he was. Anyways. Sea lamprey are an invasive species in the Great Lakes. They have a suction cup mouth ringed with sharp little teeth, and they actually attach themselves to fish and feed on their blood, and usually killing them. Now, one sea lamprey can kill 20 to 40 pounds of fish in its lifetime. Not sure what that lifespan is. We're going to find out. The Great Lakes Fisheries Commission, the GLFC, is a U.S.-Canadian agency established in 1955, and the commission coordinates fisheries research, facilities, cooperative fisheries management, and control the invasive sea lamprey. In mid-April, there was a concern of the Great Lakes Lamprey Control Program facing setbacks due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We're about to find out. Dr. Mark Gadden serves as Communications Director and Legislative Liaison for the Great Lakes Fisheries Commissions, and he joins us now. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Great to be with you. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for joining us. A wonderful weekend. Great weekend to be in the outdoors, for sure. Pandemic be damned, is what I say.
Right.
So, obviously, the first question, because I see it here in the notes, but, you know, it's something that we never really pay a lot of attention to. All of these projects that were up and running pre-pandemic, you know, none of us really realize the interruption factors that are involved in these things. And certainly the lamprey project is one of them. How is it affected?
Well, your lead-in was quite good about lamprey. They are destructive, invasive species that we have a successful control program. If we didn't, we'd have no fishery to speak of. But the planning that goes into lamprey control, which is an annual thing, is quite extensive. It's a cross-border U.S.-Canada program. So people from both countries work together in the wintertime and plan a schedule. And then we go out and attack the lamprey starting around April. And we obviously had to delay that because of the COVID and the travel restrictions and the need to be safe, and that has meant that we've gotten off to a slow start. And I don't want to sound too cliche here, but, you know, the lamprey don't wait for COVID. They don't social distance. We've had lamprey traps chock full of sea lamprey. So obviously they're there, and we need to get them under control. But, yes, we are delayed. Delayed but not deferred. We're not going to stop the battle. It'll just be starting a little later than usual.
Are there concerns that it might set you back, or is it something we can quickly pick up and resume?
There are definitely concerns because it's a highly choreographed schedule. We have crews that go out into the field and do the work. A treatment, lampreys are treated in streams in the Great Lakes where they live as larvae, so we get them before they go out and kill fish. right. which is fortunate. But the lamprey crews will spend about a week maybe on certainly the larger systems. So it does take time. We can push them back farther into the fall. We run into issues with the states and the province in terms of agreements that we have on permitting. But there are our partners in this. They want the lampreys gone just as much as we do. So we've run into some wonderful flexibility with our partners in that regard. But it will be late. Maybe it's possible we can start earlier next spring. That's a possibility as well. So at the moment, we don't really anticipate major spikes in lamprey abundances because of the delay. But we definitely have gotten off to a slow start and is not 100% sure what the season's going to look like.
Yeah. How long have we been fighting this battle, Mark?
We've been fighting the battle since about 1958. That was when lamprey were at their peak, but they discovered in 1957 a lampreycide, and it's exactly like it sounds. It's a pesticide that's selective to lamprey, so they call it a lampreycide. It's a one-of-a-kind in the world, and it's been used since 1958 in the Great Lakes Basin. The problem with lamprey is that they are a coiled menace. They will bounce back the moment you ease up on control, and we know that. But the good news is that we have a selective tool, something that targets the sea lamprey and not other fish species. There's no other place on the planet where an invasive species, especially one that's so destructive, is controlled with such precision and certainly at a spatial level as large as the Great Lakes. So it's a pretty unique program out there.
I was going to just say, you know, we've had so many invasive species that I can recall come and go or come and stay and work themselves into the very fiber of our natural places, and now, in fact, are part of the ecosystem. But this one just this one defies all of those rules, doesn't it? This is totally different, you know.
Yeah, nothing like it. And you know, we are fortunate in a way. It's hard to say fortunate when you're dealing with something like a lamprey, because they will kill, as you said, about 40 pounds of fish, leave grotesque wounds, and just they essentially destroyed the fishery until we brought them under control. But they are controllable. We're working on Asian carp controls. Asian carp is a species that's threatening to get into the Great Lakes, and right now there's nothing like a lampreycide for Asian carp. So if you wanted to kill Asian carp, which is not that difficult, you're killing everything else as well.
Right.
The silver bullet is finding something that you can use to target that species. But I think that was well said, Angelo, as you said as well, where most of these invasive species, they don't come and go, they come and stay. So our focus is prevention in the first place, or you're going to be stuck with something. Lamprey, we got lucky, and we found ways that we could target them, but we've not been so lucky with other things, you know, like zebra mussels or gobies or spiny water fleas or things that really cause a lot of heartburn to people who fish in the Great Lakes.
But, you know, those ones you just mentioned have sort of worked their way into the system. Goby, for example, in the Great Lakes on the St. Lawrence Seaway, all the way down to salt water, as a matter of fact, now has become one of the best food sources that our freshwater sport fish have. So they've kind of worked their way in. Zebra mussels, there's been areas where the zebra mussels have actually gone in and through their filtration system have cleaned up waterways and given life to, or at least supported life that was already there to a greater extent. So all of these have kind of worked their way in the system. Mother Nature has a way of balancing herself out, it seems, except for this creature. And my question to you, Mark, is are there some places on Earth that have sea lamprey that where they're not considered to be the demon, where they're not that invasive species that we have to keep under control and keep away from our game fish?
Oh, certainly. And there are places on Earth in North America where sea lamprey are actually threatened or, you know, as part of the natural ecosystem. And it has to do with, back to the Mother Nature comment, I think it's a great point. There are fish species that are native. They evolve, they co-evolve with the other species in a system. And there is that balance that Mother Nature provides. You know, big things eat the small things, but it all stays in balance. And places in the Atlantic Ocean where sea lamprey are native, and they're native also if they, you know, kind of take a right turn, they'll end up over in Europe and England. So they're a pretty, you know, far-flung species. They are in natural balance with the ecosystem, but when they get into a system like the Great Lakes where there's almost unlimited spawning habitat and lots of succulent fish and nothing that keeps them in check, that's when you get these problems where they balloon out of control. It's the same with gobies and zebra mussels and lots of other invasive species where they significantly disrupt the ecosystem. Gobies are, I think it's a great example. They're munched up with in great numbers by fish. But what was there before gobies, like the native forage, was far better for fish and provided better nutrition and the like than what gobies do. Now, gobies are a good food source for some fish, but what Mother Nature provided naturally was superior to that. That's the problem with invasive species. You can also make the analogy about, you know, like your garden. You could let in all the weeds and you might have a lot of diversity in your garden, but it's certainly not better than what was there naturally.
Gotcha. You said that in some areas they are on the brink. They're almost extinct.
Yeah. So the for example, in the UK, the sea lamprey, which used to be quite abundant, is threatened and actually protected. It's part of the natural ecosystem there. The things that cause lamprey problems are dams, barriers, and habitat loss. We use dams and barriers as well in the Great Lakes Basin to keep the lamprey under control with success. If you can deny them access to their spawning streams, they're not going to reproduce. But ecosystems that have been disrupted by humans, like in the Pacific Northwest of Canada or in England or in parts of Atlantic states, those barriers and dams are thwarting lamprey migration. As a funny story, the lamprey are honored like eels the same way in the U.K., there are some traditions that date back to the Middle Ages where the city of Gloucester, for example, provides a lamprey pie to the king or queen of England on big anniversaries, you know, and events. And when they needed to do that for Queen Elizabeth for her jubilees, they suddenly couldn't make lamprey pie because the lamprey were protected in England. So they came to us. We provided them with some lamprey from Canada, so at least we could say they were from the Commonwealth. And they made it into the Queen's pie there. But it shows you, you know, how in some places the lamprey are part of the ecosystem and certainly valued. And in other places, like the Great Lakes, I was like, you know, when they called from England, I said, how many do you want? I'll send you a couple of container trucks full if you like.
I would think, and I know this obviously sounds oversimplifying the problem, but if there's an area where they're becoming extinct or they're in trouble or, you know, they're on the verge of being eradicated, wouldn't we be wise to go over there and see what they're doing, to like see what's happening? Maybe it's a natural phenomenon or maybe it's man-made, but wouldn't we be wise to go over there and then try and replicate all of those conditions over here so that we get...
Yeah, most definitely. And we've learned from each other. Interestingly enough, the same things that we used, say, to control lamprey could be used to help restore the lamprey where they are native and where they are threatened. Here's an example. Lamprey don't jump. They kind of wriggle their way past obstructions, kind of like an eel would you know, work its way up a pegboard, like an eel ladder. And so if you can find a way to facilitate, help the lamprey get past an obstruction like a barrier, whether it's a dam out in the Pacific Northwest where lamprey are native or a dam in the Great Lakes where lamprey are not native, you can help them get past that dam. And in the Great Lakes, when they reach the top, they might fall into a trap. And in the Pacific Northwest, when they reach the top, they might you know, be on their merry way and have access to that stream. So the exact same thing, that would be like a lamprey ladder. We use to control them, they'll use to get them past the dam. And we have some wonderful cross-pollination, really, of our science between many regions of the world concerning the lamprey.
It's a fascinating subject because I mean, I remember as a kid chasing them around the creeks and stuff, and it amazes me that we've been fighting this battle for so long, and if we don't fight it every day, it gets out of control real quick. That just blows my mind. How can for folks who might not be familiar with this creature, how can you help them identify it? Is there someplace they can go and see them and whatnot?
The pictures, they're very photogenic. They look like aliens. Not to worry, they'll suck on fish and they'll bore a hole through the fish's scales and skin and feed on the fish's blood. but they don't like warm-blooded creatures. So you or your dog or anything that might be in the water for recreating is not going to be harmed by this. If you're a long-distance swimmer, your body might cool down enough, and lamprey are known to hitch a ride, kind of grab onto you, but they don't attack humans. But you can go to www.glfc for Great Lakes Fishery Commission. .org, and there's lots of pictures and video. And this time of year as well, the lamprey are moving into streams to spawn, and it would not be unusual if you were out in a stream and you see one just kind of swim by. They're half blind, they're kind of bumping into rocks as they make their way upstream to build a nest. They're oblivious to pretty much anything except finding that mate. So it's pretty common where you could be in the river or standing on the shore and just see a big old sea lamprey slither on by.
They are an awesome sight. I got to tell you, they'll make your hair curl for sure if you encounter them in the wild. An incredible animal. And you're right. It looks like it's from another planet. It looks like a total alien to this planet for sure. Dr. Gadden, it's a fascinating subject. I certainly hope the pandemic hasn't slowed you guys down at all, and that you'll pick it right up again and get these creatures under control.
We're ready to go.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Dr. Mark Gadden, Communications Director and Legislative Liaison with the Great Lakes Fishery Commission out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, USA. And see, COVID affects people in strange ways. In their case, they can't go out catching strange alien creatures. And they are. They're the grossest looking things I've ever seen. Anyways, more journal after this. Derek, go away.